He's the fastest man in South Africa and the athlete carrying the country's sprint hopes into next year's Tokyo Olympics as he looks to improve on his fifth place in Rio 4 years ago. But after running a season's best 9.91 in March this year, pre-lockdown, just how quickly did he have to throw out his plans for 2020?
2020 has been turbulent. For me, with the athletic side, it's been one of those years where it's like I started off on a really high note when I ran my season opener in Pretoria and I ran 9.91. And that was the fastest I've ever started a season. So I was really geared up for the Olympics and I was motivated and think, okay, you know, this is the year, you know, my year starting off well and we're ready to go. Then a couple of weeks later, we got into lockdown and we were in lockdown for like 2 months, no training for 2 months. And literally 2 months for us means you have to start again. You have to start off from fresh, you know. And it was just like uneasiness and unsurety because we didn't know if we were able to go to Europe and go race and go continue training, because that was the most important thing for me, was to actually go back to training so that I can actually complete a full season and not miss out on the season and start off on a -2 next year when I have to start off for the next season. But then I was just happy that I was able to go to Europe and compete and I did really well there. So I guess it started off high, then, you know, the lockdown, and then finished off high. So it was a good year.
So I mean, I think people underestimate perhaps the mental strain that the complete change in plan and the lockdown and the lack of competition puts on athletes. I mean, I think there's a physical side, there's a mental side. Let's start with, how did you deal initially mentally with getting your head around the fact that the training you'd built up towards the Olympics with was now going to basically be tossed in the rubbish bin?
Yeah, like mentally it was tough because it was like, I've done so much work, my head has been prepared for this moment. I knew at that time it was a couple of months to go to Olympics. Like, everything I had planned for was happening. And now I had to accept that, okay, this is not happening. I have to change my mind, change my focus, and say, okay, I have to start again from fresh. I have to make sure that I am okay, I am good and healthy, because we had to worry about being healthy, you know. So the mind switched from let's train to just stay healthy, try, you know, respect the lockdown rules. And then you start getting this hunger of, I need to go back to training, I need to start doing something, I need to move, because I can't just sit still, you know. And the mind just played with me, because it was a thing of, it's also, I think, best way to say it was very challenging, because it's like you set goals, the goals can't be achieved not because of you. Now you have to change your mind and set new goals and then work on those new goals. But for me it was more of like a short-term goal. So I said, okay, you know what, the Olympics are not cancelled, they're just postponed to next year, so still keep my goals for Olympics, but just add in these short-term goals for the rest of the year to keep going and I can get through it.
So, I mean, you're an athlete, you're a sprinter, you used to spend your time training and racing. What did you do during lockdown?
I played a lot of games. I played a lot of Xbox games. I was playing Call of Duty a lot, and I still play it now, but it was just gaming, staying indoors, eating whatever you could eat. And I didn't watch much TV, I was just on the games, actually.
And the eating, did you have to keep an eye on that to make sure that you don't get badly out of shape?
I actually did, but the crazy thing with me is, you know, everybody in the off season they say they pick up weight. I don't pick up weight. I do the opposite. I lose a lot of weight because, like, I don't eat. So I'm too lazy to eat. So I'll just eat like a packet of chips and I'll be like, okay, I'm fine. Go on with the day, then get hungry, then like eat like marshmallows, then go on with the day, then it's evening and I'm like, okay, snap, I didn't eat the whole day, I need to eat some proper food, and then I'll eat food. So it's the diet in the off season is really tough. So that for me was off season in a sense.
And where did you lock down, Akani, and were you on your own?
No. I went to my mother's house, my mother's place, with my family.
And is that still in Kempton Park?
Yep. Still in Kempton Park.
I guess you're from Kempton. You still got lots of family there?
Yeah. Most of my immediate family live around Kempton Park, so we're all around, like, probably 10-minute drive from each other. So we're not too far, so it helps, you know, when we want to see each other or just move around and stuff.
Are you a tight family?
Yeah, we are a very tight family. Always seeing each other, always together. So yeah, we tighten it.
And the other special person in your life, I believe, is a netball player. Is that right?
Yeah, Jo Prince. She's a netball player. She's currently playing TNL right now. She's great, man. It's just like long distance relationships are tough. So yeah, it's one of those things, but we make it work.
Is she down in Stellenbosch?
Yeah, she's in Stellenbosch, but right now they are in Bloemfontein playing the netball league. And they're in a bubble, so I couldn't even go up and see her and watch. So it's just one of those things. You just have to watch from home.
So I'm always interested in the backstory. How does an athlete or a sprinter end up with a netball player? How did you guys meet?
Through people, you know, because of the sport. You know, sporting world is very small. Everybody knows someone that knows someone that knows someone. You know, and when I was still studying at Tux and she was still studying at Stellenbosch, they used to come play in Pretoria and we would go watch, and I knew some of the netball players from Tux, and she also knew them, and we just met like that. And yeah, it just took us a while after meeting to actually start talking properly and get the relationship going.
Now, you mentioned Tux and being a student. Science, I believe, is that your qualification? Have you qualified? Are you still studying?
No, I'm qualified. I got my degree in 2018, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember. 2018 or 2017, around that time.
And what is the thinking behind that qualification? Is that something you'd like to explore as a career post running?
I have always been into IT. Like, since I was a kid, I always was like a tech dude. Still, like, keep my tech head going. So for me, it was more of like, I think, okay, to look into when I retire. But also, I kind of like with the athletics now, I've kind of seen like opportunities for tech to get into athletics, and which is a way like into athletics South Africa, you know. So I've seen ways that we can better the ways things are run in athletics South Africa with technology. So that's something I'm looking into. So that's what I'm going to use. I'm trying to use my qualification.
I mean, you're 27 now. Are you at the point where you've got one eye on what you might get up to post running, or is there still plenty of gas in the tank from a sprinting point of view?
So for me, it's I keep saying I have like between 8 to 10 more years, you know. I want to do 3 more Olympics, 3 more pushing it. Well, 3 more, including next one. And yeah, so 3 more Olympics, and then call it and then just retire after that. But there's still a lot more to go, because for me, I know what was with running, like most of the guys started off at an early age, so the body runs out earlier. And I started later on in life. Like, I started when I was 19, and I only turned pro when I was 19. And so I still got a little bit more in the tank.
I mean, there are examples of guys, sprinters, that have gone on to run at a late age. Kim Collins, I mean, Justin Gatlin. Do you look at those guys and think, well, you know, I can do that as well for the reasons you just mentioned?
Yeah, for sure. You know, Gatlin is 36 or 37 this year.
Yeah.
And still pushing, you know. And Kim Collins went to 40 and he still managed a sub 10 at 40. So it's like, they used to set boundaries on us and say, yeah, you guys don't compete until, and you can only compete until you're like 35, and that's where the body just dies out. But they've pushed the boundaries and they've shown us it's possible, you know, and I'm also going to try push it as much as I can and try push to a point where the body can't give anymore, you know, and that's when I say, okay, you know what, I don't have the drive for it anymore, I don't have that heart for it anymore, and I can feel in my body that, you know, I'm struggling a bit, so not, let me just call it.
It's tough to bring up Justin Gatlin's name and not reference the doping controversy that surrounded his career, Connie. Do you regard him as a friend or is he a competitor? And what's your view on his, in inverted commas, doping history?
Justin Gatlin is a competitor, man. For me, I have a lot of respect for him as a competitor. You know, when we race, we have respect for each other. We always tell each other, you know what, we're going for it, you know. And I know that when he shows up, he's ready to run, you know, and that's something I respect from him, you know. He's a fighter, you know, he's a bulldog, like, he runs till the end, and with his doping history, man, that's just, it's unfortunate that had to happen, and for me, like, as an athlete coming up, seeing that and knowing that that's part of his history, like, puts a cup a little bit of, like, but at the end of the day, I've only been racing him now, and from what I know now, it's like, I have a lot of respect for him and a lot of respect for him as an athlete that he fights.
It's obviously unfortunate that your sport has that sort of specter hanging over it. How do you deal with that? Because, I mean, I think it's, you know, if you look back at the history, if you go back to, you know, the Ben Johnsons of this world, the first sort of major doping controversy and his long-term rivalry with Carl Lewis and the various athletes that have come on and dominated, yet those, you know, there's plenty of examples of doping, particularly in the 100 metres. How do you deal with that as a sprinter when, you know, I guess it's a bit like a cyclist. It's also, you know, cycling's also suffered from that, the spectre of doping. How do you deal with that and make sure that, you know, you stay true to who you are?
I just know that, you know, I always say that, you know, with running, you know, you can only push your body to a certain limit and your body can only give you so much, you know, and that doesn't mean you have to tap into other things to make you better, you know. You've been blessed with a talent, you just work with that talent and do what you can with that talent, you know. It's just unfortunate that in my sport, in the event that I am in, it's known for doping, and, you know, a lot of people try to get away with it, but I'm hoping that the systems that have been put into place, you know, they are enforced, you know, and the people actually respect the rules, you know, because there's a lot of things that are going on that frustrate us as athletes. You know, we see athletes that are getting away with it, and we always asking each other, like, why is this happening? I don't know if you know of the latest case now with Eve Nasser, that she just got, her ban just got lifted off, and it's just like, okay, there's rules put into place, you know, you're not supposed to miss your tests, you're not supposed to do certain things, but you push the boundaries, you know. Why do you push the boundaries? What's the purpose of you pushing the boundaries? Just go out there, train. If they need you, put your times in, do what you need to do, do your tests and get on with it, you know. And it makes it difficult for us, you know, as an athletic group in whole, because we're trying to grow the athletics brand, we're trying to grow athletics as a sport, and every time we try to do that, it gets hit by controversy, and then the sponsors are going to be like, nah, we can't be associated with this because, you know, there's just too much doubt. But it's just tricky, man, it's just really tricky, but I really hope and pray that we can actually get to a point where that is not a thing, you know, and we are all running clean, we're all running fair, we're not trying to push the boundaries, we're respecting the rules, and we're doing the best we can to uplift our sport.
You've just come off a successful 3 or 4 races in Europe, unbeaten there, Connie, in a nice run. When you line up in those races and when you line up at the Olympics next year, do you get down on the starting blocks and are you absolutely sure that you're running against a clean field and the other 7 guys next to you? I mean, do you have that confidence that, right, I think we've got to a point now where everyone's clean?
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody when we run, you know, I know the guys that normally I run against, we get tested like frequently, you know, so it's really okay. But at the end of the day, I can only worry about what I've done in training, my race, what I do, and me getting to the line first, you know, what A, B, C, D, and whoever does whatever they do, it's their own thing, you know. I think that's the one of the benefits of running, you know. You have your own lane and sprinting, you have your own lane, you worry about your own lane, and, you know, they say the saying of staying your own lane, it means a lot, you know, it means a lot. So it's like, focus on what you can focus on, you know, deal with what you can deal with, and just make sure you get to the line first.
Now, we talked about you playing PlayStation and Call of Duty and FIFA and that earlier. What else does Akani Simbine like to get up to away from the running track?
I like chilling. I like spending time with my family, my loved ones. I actually just like staying indoors a lot, because when I start training, I'm always out. And just me being able to stay training, me being able to I'm also like kind of big in investing, so I look at new ventures I can get into and stuff like that. So it's just like trying keeping my interests, you know, the investing, the tech, and then just relaxing.
We're going to see you invest in some fintech then in the future, using your IT background and the proceeds of your running. Give us a sense of what sort of investments you're making. Any particular industries or sectors that grab your eye?
Especially tech, because I'm from a tech background. Also, sport. For me, the sporting, I have to just give back to the sport as well and make sure that is not forgotten. But my big one is tech. I'm always looking to tech because that's something I really know and I'm pretty passionate about.
Now, you mentioned, you know, obviously, you know, when you're not investing or looking or at other things and chilling, you know, you're running and training. Give us a sense when sort of the heart of your season, the heart of your training, what does your training regime look like? I mean, how many hours a day are we talking? How many hours a day on the track? You know, how many hours in the gym? Just give us a sort of broad view of what that looks like.
So on a normal day of training, I would wake up at around 7, and then I have training at 8:30. And then I know I'll have physio at like 12 or 1. So it depends on my physio. And then I can have lunch. And then at 4 o'clock, I'll have my second session of the day till 6. And then I'll be done for the day. And then the following day is the same. So Monday to Saturday, I'll train like that, and then Sunday at home.
And is that just running, or where's the gym fit into that?
The gym is from 4 to 6. So I always start my days with the running, because that's the most important part. So we'll run in the morning, and then do gym in the afternoon, and then physio in between.
So let's look at that personal best, Akani. 9.89, I think you ran it 4 years ago. Are you building up now, and as we wrap up this interview, are you building up to hopefully try and better that as we look to the Olympics next year?
Yeah, for sure. You know, for me, it's a time I've been hovering around, you know, and it's been one of those frustrating things. I'm like 989 and I run 991, and I'm just like, oh, come on. Like, I'm like right there. But I know it's coming, you know. When I started training, you know, Coach Joyce used to tell me, you know, just notch it off a little bit, little by little, and it'll get there. And just make sure you do the work, you know, it'll come with the right race, the right conditions, and you'll get it. And I'm just happy with where we're at right now, because I know for a fact that, you know, I will get it. And the way it looks, it's going to come in Olympic year. Those were supposed to be this year. So, yeah, to postpone it to next year.
And Akani, just to wrap up, is it stating the obvious to say the ultimate goal is an Olympic medal, and ideally something that looks a little golden?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's always to get an Olympic medal. You know, I know that there hasn't been a South African ever to win an Olympic medal ever in 100 meters. And for me, it's something that I want to achieve. You know, I want to stand on the podium and make South Africa proud, and make my loved ones proud, and all people that support me proud, you know. So it's you know, working towards doing the best I can, and the best I can is standing on the podium and having that medal around my neck.
Well, that'll do just fine, thanks very much. The South African sprinter on an Olympic podium. I'll take that, and I'm pretty sure the country will. Akani Simbine, a man on a mission.